Hello friends, it's me, Bethany Rutter, and I'm here with a new episode of What Page Are You On? With...
me, Alice Slater.
How are you today, Alice?
I've had a cold.
You have, you're a little bit sniffly.
I might sound a little bit bunged up. I can go a bit croaky as well, so if I sound like I'm doing vocal fry, it's not intentional.
I'm going to move the microphone closer to Alice, because as well we know I have a very loud and resonant voice. I think we've got a good episode this week, Alice. I know we haven't recorded it yet, but... just
do you think that we've ever had two books that sit so perfectly next to one another?
I do not. I just remember, like, the sense of satisfaction when we settled on this theme was very pleasant. But then when I was reading the books, I was like, yes, we are geniuses. Because they both bang, right?
They are stone cold bangers.
So good.
Stone cold bangers.
So welcome to this episode of What Page Are You On? The... theme of which is...
sing the song.
What song?
Disturbia.
Oh, no, I'm not going to do that. So this episode, the theme that we settled on was Disturbia. Or rather, you know, some kind of beef in suburbia. And the two books that we plucked off Alice's bookshelves are Little Fires Everywhere by Celeste Ng and The End of Everything by Megan Abbott. Alice, let's kick off.
Should we start with? Should we start with Little Fires Everywhere?
Yes, why not?
What a banger.
Tell us about it.
Okay. Little Fires Everywhere is about two families in suburban Ohio, I believe.
Cleveland. In a town called Shaker Heights.
Oh my god. She doesn't even have the Wikipedia page open. This is just all coming out of her brain.
Yeah, but it's weird because since we read it, I've seen this place mentioned twice.
Really? What was her...
well, one was to do with someone going home for Thanksgiving on Twitter, and I guess that's where their family live. But another one...
was it Celeste Ng who is from...
it was not Celeste Ng, because I would have noticed that. But the other reason was that I saw a news story about a former Shaker Heights mayor who murdered his wife.
Lord.
Yes.
Now that you've heard of Shaker Heights, you're noticing it. But actually, maybe it does crop up in your life at least one to two times a day.
Indeed. But yeah, I thought it was very apt that this story about this horrible thing that had happened in that community was kind of, I don't know, it felt right with the theme of the episode.
Well, that's what Celeste Ng says about Shaker Heights, is that writing about it for her was like writing about a relative, because, you know, she knows it and loves it and it's her hometown, but also that it has all these, you know...
gnarly bits.
All the foibles and, yeah. You know, The book is about two families. You have a kind of nomadic Mia and her daughter Pearl, who move into a rented flat, which is owned by the Richardson family. Pearl becomes kind of enamoured by the family, and one child, Izzy, becomes quite enamoured with Mia, Pearl's mother. So it's kind of a kind of swapping of daughters, like a cross-pollination of...
these two families, yeah. One of which is very kind of... nomadic and has no money, and the other one is deeply entrenched into the life and the history of Shaker Heights and is very affluent.
Mm-hmm.
Affluent enough to have spare houses that you can rent out to people.
Beyond that, I can't decide. You've read it more recently than me, because I can't decide how much of the plot would be blurbing it and how much of the plot needs to unfold for the reader.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, because the book begins with Izzy setting various fires in her family home, and then the rest of the book then circles back to the previous year-ish that led up to that point. And yeah, I guess there are things that you wouldn't want to necessarily give away because they're nice to find out in your own time, but I guess it's kind of about like families and motherhood and culture and
coming of age, teenager, sexual experimentations and lust.
And feelings.
Friendship.
Yeah.
All of our favourite things.
All of the good stuff. But there's also a really, really interesting subplot about...
it's the subplot.
Yeah.
That I was like, I just don't know if it's something that you can blurb.
Yeah. Let's leave out the subplot. It has a really good subplot. It has a really, really super interesting and thought-provoking subplot.
Something which I would, like, say moves the book into territory akin to, like, The Slap. You know, where you're kind of constantly being presented with different versions of this narrative, different factors and different bits of information come in that sway your opinion as to what you think the outcome should be.
Yeah.
I mean, I assume that we probably had the same feeling, and I think that Celeste Ng has written it so that the reader should kind of fall on one side.
Yeah.
Because the ending is a good ending.
Yeah, and it's not as obvious as... Although it is written with one particular angle probably being favoured, I don't feel like it's so obvious that the other potential outcome is so wrong.
Yeah, agreed. But enough about that. It's
enough about the subplot.
okay.
Did it bang?
It bangs so far. I've already said this. It bangs like a drum.
It does, doesn't yeah. it?
So I feel like it everything falls into place like dominoes. You know, something will happen. A character will make a decision, write down the wrong name, etc., right? Little moments build, almost like little fires in an act of arson.
Indeed.
and it's so it feels very satisfying, especially because you know how the book is going to end, because it opens with the ending. But it's watching everything fall into place so perfectly to lead you right back to where
to
you
allow
can.
Allow that ending
it's
to take
so
place.
Satisfying.
Yeah, I was really surprised. So I took it off your hands on a Sunday when we recorded the last episode, and we were having a drink in the castle in Walthamstow, down the road from here, on maybe like a Wednesday. And when I took the book from you, I was like, oh, I will try and arrange some time to give this to you in like a week's time. And then I had already finished it and was able to produce it for you on that Wednesday or Thursday, whatever it was.
Yeah, it zips. You zip through it.
It's not a short book. I mean, it's not like a wildly long book either, but it's not short, but it really draws you in. It's, you know, for something that is not a thriller, it really has a wild pace. And I guess not just the pace, like there was just something so absorbing about it. Like you start reading it and then you realise you've read like 30 pages without really looking up, and it just really rolls along while also having quite kind of exciting plot moments as well.
I think it's because it's characterised so well. Like every character has such a rich background and personality. And like I loved the Richardson children. Like, they're all awful, obviously. They're all awful in their own way, but they are just so well realised.
Yeah, they're real teenagers. The only thing I would say is that the only thing I would have liked more of was the character of Izzy, because I feel like by the time you get to her doing this arson, I expected to understand it a little bit better.
Mm.
I think it gives like 80% enough background of why she does it and who she is. No, I think it gives enough background as to why she does it, but I don't think I know well enough who she is. And I think sometimes it was a little bit like caricatured, sulky teenager who doesn't understand anyone and nobody understands. I would have liked a little bit more background on her, because I felt like the other three children, plus Pearl, who is not in the same family, but they were all really, I feel like they all got their own time in the book. And Izzy, who at the beginning you think is kind of the architect of the point of the plot, I would like to have been given more time and space.
A bit more screen time,
yeah.
Yeah, I think she's quite enigmatic.
Yeah.
And like, I read it this year, but probably in the spring. And I mean, I think her character, what's really stays with me is, you know, her kicking doors closed, like being that very kind of moody adolescent.
Yeah.
But then I think, to be honest, all of the characters have left about the same level of an impression on me.
Yeah.
You know, like, in my head, Trip is just Trip Fontaine.
Yeah, it's right? Like there's a reason they have the same name.
Yeah.
Trip Fontaine from The Virgin Suicides. Which,
that works for me.
Yeah.
Like, I love it. I absolutely love it. I love, like, I think obviously that was intentional. I love, like, that kind of referential little touch. And like, what's his name? Moody?
Yeah.
Yeah, like he's just a nice guy.
With a kind of artistic bent.
Yeah. Man, that's fine too.
Yeah. I started re-listening to The Virgin Suicides on audiobook earlier this week. That is obviously where the character Trip Fontaine is from. For those listening at home who haven't read it. And that, I feel like that's like the kind of OG suburban.
That's what I was going to say, man. Like, I think that The End of Everything also leans really heavily on The Virgin Suicides in quite a different way.
Yeah.
But, like, there's that moment, I am skipping ahead now, but when Dusty runs out to the car, and the dude's like, I never thought she would come out.
Yeah.
I was like, that's exactly, Loves Elizabeth. That's Loves Elizabeth running into Trip Fontaine's car.
That's straight from Virgin Suicides.
Straight off the pages.
Yeah. And although I don't know, do they ever say where the Virgin Suicides is set specifically? Because in the bit that I've listened to the first half of it,
I don't think they do. I think it is like generic suburbia.
Yeah,
I might be wrong. I mean, they have seasons because the leaves fall, so yeah. I presume somewhere east. But I'm googling.
But yeah, I think because the Virgin Suicides does what this does so well, it's unsurprising that both Little Fires Everywhere and The End of Everything have echoes of Virgin Suicides. I liked that.
Me too. I dig it.
I dig it too. I also really enjoyed
Everything
I Never Told You. Yeah.
Which I still haven't read.
Yeah, I really liked that. I read it when it came out, maybe like 2013 or something, and I remember loving that. So it was almost a surprise to even me that it took me so long to read Little Fires Everywhere. I don't know how it passed me by or why I sat on it for a while. Because I remember loving Everything I Never Told You. I think you'll enjoy it when you... It's very different to Little Fires Everywhere, but thematically kind of similar in some ways.
I will read it. Again, I guess I don't know why I'm sleeping on it. I probably because I just don't have a copy. I'll pick
it. Yeah.
That would help.
Yeah.
We just made the same noise.
We did. We're so in sync. So something else I liked about Little Fires Everywhere is I like books that have fake art world in them.
I knew you were going to say that.
See, once again, we know each other very well.
Yeah, you love the fake art world.
I love the fake art world. I just find it really interesting that if you're an author and you're going to make up art that someone has created, like, what do you think art is? Or how do you exemplify your character that you've invented through art? I find that so interesting. And then to create, like, galleries or to how this fake person fits into the real artistic ecosystem of New York or wherever. I love that. It's just those little things that make Little Fires Everywhere feel very kind of well-realized and real.
See, the thing with fake art or any, like, fake movies, fake celebrities, it always takes me a little while to figure out if they're really fake.
Yeah.
It's like, obviously, the Mia character, who's a photographer and artist, like, obviously, you know that she's not real because, you know, she's a character. But otherwise, like, I'm thinking about, what's Lemony Snicket's real name?
Daniel Handler.
Right. Have you read his book about Reasons Why We Broke Up?
No.
I can't really remember the author's name, can't really remember the book title, but it is actually a really good YA book. And each page, each chapter is about a different item in this couple's, like, box of memories. And then each chapter explains, like, a story, and basically it's, like, why they ended up breaking up. It's a great book. But they are cinephiles, and they go to the movies all the time in it. But every single film in the book is made up.
That's so weird.
And I was like, why? Like, you don't have to do this. See, they don't all have to be made up.
That's a lot of work.
And, like, the book does pivot on the cinema a lot. But I was like, you know, in The Accidental, Ali Smith used real films and, like, real situations from the movies. Like,
it's not impossible.
You're not going to get sued.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I found that really grating. Especially because it was all, like, you know, golden age Hollywood.
Yeah.
It's like, what an opportunity to introduce, like, teenage readers to some of these real movies things. And directors and stars. No.
Very interesting. Yeah, and sometimes it's, like, trying to figure out what from real life this is based on or what kind of person we're meant to understand this character and their work as a kind of version of. I like that. You know I like that.
I loved Mia's character as well.
Yeah.
Like, I could see why Izzy, like, fell for her so much.
Agree.
She had, like, an edge, you know? She was spiky and...
Well, also being a mom, like, being a kind of very present parent, she wasn't this kind of, like, wild, negligent, hedonistic person. She was spiky and had an edge, but, yeah, was fundamentally, like, a good mom.
Agreed.
And was so different to the mum in the kind of other family's house, who I felt was a very realised character, but just one that you like a lot less.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And the dad, I think, is barely present. But
he basically doesn't count. He's there as a prop.
He's a warm body.
For the subplot.
He is, it's true.
As all male characters should be.
Indeed.
No, I jest.
But yeah, I loved this, and I'm happy. I'm so happy that us doing it for this episode gave me an opportunity to read it.
I found it was quite, because obviously I read a lot of books about teenage girls and the strife of friendship and all that shit. This one I felt operated on a different level because so much of it is about race and class.
Yeah.
Like, it just goes a little bit deeper than the white suburban, like, Disturbia theme, which I'm very familiar with. It was doing a little bit more, it was much more interesting.
Even though all of the characters in the main plot are white.
Mm-hmm.
It still has this, like, extra elements that have effects on those characters as well.
Yeah.
So good. I can't think of many people that wouldn't like this book. Like, it just does a lot, I think, and it probably appeals to lots. It's not like, if you only read thrillers or if you only, I don't know, it has so much going on.
You were right when you said it does operate like a thriller, and I think it's because you know that it ends in disaster. Like, it has this real dark streak, and it has this, like, awful sinking inevitability that things are not going to work out, that they're not all going to end up happy, that bad things are going to happen. It's just working out
how
who
and
does
why.
What to whom to end up fucking it all up for everyone.
Yeah.
And of course that's kind of the spine of the book, is everyone does something to pretty much everyone else.
Yeah. It's just little fires everywhere, isn't it?
Little fires everywhere! Oh.
It is the little fires. So
great,
yeah.
Title.
If you are looking, I think this would be like maybe a good gift. You know,
I was going to say the same thing.
We're just so smart.
Yeah.
If you have a book lover who you know hasn't read Little Fires Everywhere by Celeste Ng, we think this could be a good Christmas present. Or whatever holiday you celebrate.
I think because also she has a very, like, slick and tight and accessible writing style.
Agree.
You're never, like, lost in the kind of dallyings of a character's thoughts. Like, it remains pretty action-based. Even though it's very beautifully written. It, you know, it's not just functional, but I think that's why it's feels like such a pacey, quick read.
Yeah, it's true. And yeah, it really does feel so quick. I can't believe how quickly I read it. Because it's good, but also because it's easy to read. What a banger. What a blessing it was to read that
book.
Well done. So, okay. Our second book is very exciting.
Did you like it?
I really liked it.
I'm so happy.
So here's the thing. Alice and I have been friends for some time, and, like, in general, we experience much of the same stuff, and we, like, seek out similar-ish media, except you love horror stuff, and I watch
you
less
like
horror.
The theatre.
I like going to the theatre.
Nerd.
I'm an absolute nerd. But one thing that Alice truly loves that I had not experienced was the author Megan Abbott.
And the city of New Orleans.
And the city of New Orleans. Those two things. And now I can join Alice in having read a Megan Abbott book.
Because, I'm so glad that this was your first.
Me too. You never forget your first time. So, would you like to talk about The End of Everything by Megan Abbott?
No, you should not shell this one.
Okay.
Have a go.
So, The End of Everything by Megan Abbott is about a kind of younger teenage girl called Lizzie. How old are they? What, like
13?
13, yeah. So, as early teen as you can get. Teenage girl called Lizzie, who lives next door to her very best friend in the whole world called Evie. And Evie goes missing, and that's kind of the plot. Evie goes
missing. She's missing for, like,
Most of the book,
yeah.
Yeah.
But because it's played so heavily on memory, she's very present in the book, even though she is absent.
Because, as well as resting heavily on memory, Evie may be gone, but her family are still there, and Lizzie is very kind of enmeshed in Evie's family life.
Yeah, much like Pearl and the Richardsons.
In Little Fires Everywhere.
Yeah, Evie kind of slides into the, what's their name again? The Ververs?
Ververs, V-E-R-V-E-R-S, which I think is a strange name. If that's your last name, why would you call your child Evie? But whatever.
Evie Verver.
It does not trip off the tongue. But still, that's Megan Abbott's decision, not mine.
Did it
banged. It banged. I really, really loved it. And if that's kind of what Megan Abbott books are like, I'm hyped to read more.
Yeah, I feel like she definitely sings from my hymn sheet. All of her books pretty much are about female either friendship or competitiveness, relationships, suburbia. They all have, like, a kind of streak of the thriller to them.
Yeah.
And written just sublimely. Absolutely sublimely.
It's a joy to read.
And in fact, even though this, The End of Everything, has big Virgin Suicides vibes, her third book is called The Fever, which is written in first person plural. So even more so. So that's yeah. we instead of I. So yeah, even more so. Like, she is obviously a Eugenides fan. And, so am I.
So how does The End of Everything kind of fit into the Megan Abbott world? Like, is it typical of her books to be about teenagers, or are they more about adults?
So I think none of them are quite about the same age group. So this one is about 13-year-olds, but it obviously, because it's focusing a lot on memory, it also talks a lot about childhood.
Mm.
She has maybe two or three that are also high school but older. And then her most recent book, which bangs so bloody hard, I really urge everyone to read it. It's called...
Take My Hand.
Take My Hand. Is it?
Yeah.
Take My Hand.
Yeah. Let's look it up, but...
Give me your hand.
Yeah.
So yeah, but her most recent book is about adults. It does kind of look back on when they knew each other, like, earlier in life, but I can't really remember the age group. It's mainly focusing on when they're... ladies at work.
Cool.
Lady scientists. It's just, it bangs absolutely hard.
I just can't believe that something that would so obviously appeal to me has eluded me for my whole life.
I mean, it's not like I didn't tell you.
It's true. You did give me adequate warning.
And what did you think of the writing style?
I loved it.
Did it remind you of The Girls?
Yeah, kind of, yeah.
It's a little bit less breathless.
By Emma Klein, yeah.
It's a little bit more, I think, concrete.
Yeah, more rooted in reality.
Yeah.
But I guess, yeah, it is set in this kind of hazy summer memories, and, yeah, I really liked that. And I can't remember how much of it left, but I had maybe, like, 100 pages left, so quite a lot. And I was like, oh, okay, I'm going to go in the bath, and I'm going to read maybe 50 pages. And I just remember, like, shivering. Reading like the last 100 in one go, because I couldn't wait until I got out of the bath to finish reading it. I was just in this, like, my bath is quite small, it's not particularly comfortable.
I have this image of you as this, like, little shivering
yeah
little washed up mermaid.
Yeah, that's me in my bath reading The End of Everything. Because once the story kind of starts to resolve itself, I was just like, I need to read everything. I can't leave any page unturned. I must get to the end and find out everything that I need to know.
You know what I think is really interesting about that book?
Is that you can't remember the ending.
I can remember the ending.
Okay, fine, go on. What's interesting?
I reread it.
I see.
I'll have you know, but I can't remember the ending. In fact, the actual last scene, I, like, never forgot. It's been in my head.
Yeah.
It's just so disturbing, but so perfect. And also so kind of enigmatic.
Yeah. It's the kind of thing where you know that... I feel like people are probably, like, Googling what is the ending of The End of Everything.
But that's,
you know,
the thing, is that you can't Google it. You have to read it.
Yeah.
Because...
you don't understand it. It's not anything. It's just...
And I think that some people, truthfully, I think that some people would really hate the book, the plot of the book.
Yeah, this one is not for everyone. I think this one is, yeah, like, not Little Fires Everywhere.
This I think you need to go in kind of with some strong content notes.
Yeah.
You know, it definitely takes a direction that I think some people would find quite uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Feel free to DM us if you're concerned and would like some more information, because it's very hard to deliver off-the-cuff content note for this book. But it looks at abusive relationships in a way that I think would definitely push some people's buttons.
Agree.
But it explores something which I think is very difficult to even touch upon. But I think ultimately in fiction, nothing is truly off the table.
Yeah.
It just has to be handled right and written by the right person.
Agree.
And that's all I can really say about that.
I cut you off before. What were you going to say? You were like, something I think is really interesting about this book. And I was like...
So, generally, I don't know if you've ever experienced this, but have you ever had a conversation where you're trying to determine if a book is young adult or adult fiction?
Yeah.
So, like, a general rule of thumb is that if a book has teenage characters in it, but is very, kind of reflective, if you, so, you know, if it's an adult voice looking back, then it's going to be more suitable for adults. If you have a very young, very immediate voice, then obviously this is not thinking about content, just writing style. That's going to be better suited to young adults. And there's exceptions to the rule, of course. It's not a rule, it's just a guideline, but I just think it's really interesting that this book does not have an adult voice in it.
Not at all.
Like, it is... Yeah, it just... It has an immediacy to it, and yet is so kind of undeniably adult.
Yeah.
It's a really interesting book on a technical level.
It's really unusual. I just think for something to be told from the point of view of a 13-year-old where the only reflection is literally to their earlier childhood, it isn't someone in their adulthood looking back on their life as a 13-year-old girl. Like, all of the reflection is pre the age of 13.
Especially because there is no, like, sage-like character explaining
the meaning and the significance, yeah, and what this, you know, whether this is good or bad. Or
in fact, what happens to her a lot, her mother, Dusty, Evie's older sister, who's left behind, and maybe someone else. Pretty much every character says to Lizzie at one point or another, you don't understand.
Yeah.
You can't possibly understand. You don't get it, do you? And, like, she's never given... No one ever just explains anything to her.
Yeah, it's so true.
They touch upon, like, her mother says, when, at the very beginning, when Evie's first reported missing, she says something like, you don't understand what's going on, and you can't. And it almost in a way that's like, and I don't
want you to,
like, you shouldn't have to even think about,
yeah,
how awful this situation is. Yeah, it's interesting that Megan Abbott manages to maintain that
lack of comprehension.
And yet, obviously, as adults reading the book,
you know what the implication is. So the only criticism I had of this book is that sometimes I just didn't believe things that Lizzie was doing. What, there are some decisions that she makes that I'm just like, why would you do that?
Can you name one?
It's like lies that she knows to tell, or things,
and
like,
I see, yeah, yeah,
the kind of personal investigations that she does. I just think, I don't know, I didn't always buy them. The ways that she gets involved in the search for her friend, I sometimes was like, I just don't think that would happen. I just don't think a 13-year-old girl would do that, or would know to do that, or would think of involving herself in that way. But
that's interesting. I definitely didn't have the same doubt, but I think that certainly Dusty is constantly kind of sniffing around her and doesn't trust her.
Yeah.
And so I think that things don't work. It doesn't go smoothly for her when she makes these bad decisions, and when she, like, inserts herself at some key points. But I think some of the things she does are so stupid.
That only a 13-year-old girl, yeah, could do that. Yeah, maybe, like, yeah.
I don't want to... It would be a spoiler, but one of the things she does...
Yeah.
Like, I think any reasonable teenager who has read movies and watches books would know that it was a really bad idea.
Yeah.
That they could potentially get caught out and it would be really bad for them. But I think that just feeds into, like, her naivety. Because she's just a dumb kid and she doesn't quite comprehend the magnitude of what she's dealing with.
Yeah, it's true. Like,
same with Dusty. And Dusty's, yeah, 17. And she also doesn't quite comprehend just how awful things are. Because she holds things back and she sees things that she doesn't necessarily share that she absolutely fucking should have done.
Yeah, I think that was what I broadly struggled with the book, was almost like looking at it from my point of view of like, well, why would you do that if you wanted something useful to happen, why would you do that? But then it's like, just because I would do it doesn't mean every character in the history of the world would do it.
But then I think that comes down to characterization, and maybe that's what the heart of your beef. Because ultimately, obviously, no one ever reacts exactly the same way in every situation. Even you on a different day would make a different choice.
So true.
But with fictional characters, we have to feel that we know them well enough that even if they surprise us, it doesn't seem out of character. If it is out of character, we want an explanation. We want to know why they've made this decision.
And maybe I feel like I don't know Lizzie as a character well enough because she is a 13-year-old girl. And we only know about her in relation to her best friend, kind of. She's not, like, a character that has... Maybe that's because everything that they did together. So there isn't, like, there is not a separate Lizzie to Evie.
See, that's the thing. Because I was about to say, like, yes, she's a less developed character, but I don't think for one second that that wasn't intentional.
Yeah.
That she only really exists in relation to Evie, in the same way that I think Evie only really exists in relation to her sister, Dusty. That she... is that's why she tries to insert herself in Evie's place, tries to have a similar relationship with Evie's father, and Dusty just says, nah, like, this is never going to be your world.
Yeah, this is my family. Yeah, I thought it was so good. I loved it. I really, much with Little Fires Everywhere, but even more so, just, like, raced through it, because I think this one has a plot that is much more like a thriller.
Yeah.
Even though it isn't a straight-up thriller, the plot of this is clearer. And it's just so interesting. I just wanted to find out what was happening and, like, what was happening on a plot level, but also what was happening on, like, a psychological level. I loved it. I loved it so much.
Are there any other books that you think we could have discussed in this episode?
Maybe we could have done Virgin Suicides in great detail. Just because re-listening to it, it just bangs so hard.
Oh, God, it's so well written.
I think what all of the books, but especially The Virgin Suicides, does really well is just capturing, like, the minutiae of boring suburban towns and lives and the weird people that live there and the little legends of... I don't know, I'm thinking about, like, the Italian-American boy whose family have built this fake tree in their garden and he can get in through all the sewer systems because it's like an escape passage. And I don't know, just all of that stuff, like the place that you're from. I really like that about all of the books, just the kind of, the boring fabric of lives that's actually really interesting. And I'm looking forward to listening to the second half of The Virgin Suicides.
Maybe I'll reread it. Although I need to buy a new copy, because my copy I've had since I was 16, and it's a movie cover that I can't find anymore. Even for a while, I thought it was lost forever, so I lent it to someone that I then fell out with. And I'm very pragmatic about books. They're just things. It doesn't fucking matter. You can replace them. It's fine. But that cover, I wouldn't be able to get hold of again. And when I finally managed to get it back, so I've retired it now. Like, it's been sellotaped together. It's faded to an almost total orange. I love it.
It's not leaving the house.
It's like one of the only books that for me has now become an object.
Yeah.
And that's fine. I can have one or two.
Of course. Off the record, when we exit this discussion and I turn off the recorder, I want you to tell me what happened to your copy of The Virgin Suicides.
Oh, it's a good story. You know the story.
I'm sure I do. I just forgot. And there are so many stories, Alice. We're always telling each other so many stories.
Other books I think we could have discussed, though, which maybe we will discuss in the future, maybe we've already discussed them, but things that would fit into this theme. The Burning Girl by Claire Massoud.
Do you know what? I've never read that.
Oh, it's so good. I think really like it. Again, it's about teenage best pals, one goes missing.
Oh, cool.
It's such a standard trope. Cold Light by Jen Ashworth. Again,
another one.
Teenage best pals, one goes missing, it bangs. Girls on Fire by Robin Wasserman.
Yep. That's who wrote it.
Yeah.
So something I think is interesting about Little Fires Everywhere and The End of Everything and The Virgin Suicides, which I don't know about the three books that you have listed, is that they are all American. Do we have a different conception of suburbia in the UK?
Cold Light is a British book. And it is different. It doesn't have... It isn't so much suburbia, but small town. Mm. I think the other thing with a lot of the other books, they're not all necessarily affluent suburbia. And I think that's something that when I think of American suburbia, I think of white picket fences and expensive cars and, you know, wealth. Whereas some of the books I mentioned are not kind of wealthy, affluent suburban families like Girls on Fire.
But yeah. I'm interested in that as a concept.
I'm trying to think if I can think of any other UK books, even just about teenage friendship. I've read so many, and yet...
So, the reason I've only listened to half of The Virgin Suicides on audiobook is that I was overcome with the urge to listen to or read, and I decided to listen to Disobedience by Naomi Alderman.
Ooh!
Yes! Which I think, weirdly, kind of fits into the suburban theme, because it's so extremely set in one particular suburb, which is Hendon in North London. And yeah, it's just interesting that that is the same kind of thing, but is also extremely different, and is also about like the memory of being a younger person in this suburb that is very kind of closed off and you feel disconnected from the rest of the world.
I'll look forward to your
my review. I think it is interesting that there is like a big difference in the conception of suburbia, and we have a very clear idea of what that means in an American context, but maybe it's less of a genre in the UK, is it? I don't know.
I mean, I think that, I guess you are right, our suburbs are different. Like, the UK is so much smaller.
And
so
fewer cities.
So you're never so further away.
Yeah.
But you're not far away, do you know what I mean? Like, if you live in Hendon, as your example, like, you're not that far away from London.
Unless you're Orthodox Jewish, which is why you would be cut off from the rest of the world. But yeah, yes. Theoretically, yeah.
But, like, I mean, you could pick any suburb. Like, if you live in Sidcup, for example, you're one train ride away from London.
Yeah, it's true.
Like, a 20-minute train ride that you can use your Oyster card. I think that even if you're not as financially mobile, I think that we would write about small towns.
Yeah, it's true.
You know, you would write about teenagers in, like, Crewe or, I don't know.
Deepest, darkest Suffolk.
Yeah.
As I keep reading books set in Suffolk.
Why?
Well, because of the Erin Kelly and then the new Michelle Paver are both set in Suffolk.
Oh. God, I'm so excited for the new Michelle Paver.
As you should be.
I'm pacing myself, though, because I've got a stack of books I'm really excited about, and I can't let anything jump the queue.
I let it jump the queue. I have no regrets.
Wow. Well, I'm skipping to this section of the pod. I'm reading a little book called The Doll Factory.
Never heard of it. Just kidding. I mentioned it in the last episode.
Yeah. So I just felt like I wanted to read it because I really like Elizabeth McNeil, the author, and I was really excited to get to it. And I was like, I can't skip things because there's loads of books I really want to read. I just have to methodically read them.
How are you doing with The Doll Factory?
God, it bangs.
Doesn't it?
It bangs so much. And I feel like I don't want to talk about it because we will do an episode. I already have at least two suggestions of books we could pair it with.
Is it Crimson Petal and the White?
Well, that was one because you said that immediately. But it actually reminds me more of A Girl with a Pearl Earring.
Which I haven't read. So
haven't you?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll do those two.
Oh, it's going to be so good. Because, yeah, like, I know I keep talking about Doll Factory, but it just bangs so hard. And like,
it's just so readable as well. Like,
and so many people are like, oh, do you think I'd like it even though I don't really like historical fiction? I'm like, bitch, yes, yes you would. Yes, you would like it even though you don't like historical fiction. So yeah, that's my current.
I also do feel that for people who don't like historical fiction very much, the Victorians are a good ride.
Yeah, because it is a ride. It's just like horrible things happening and people having sex all the time.
Yeah, and being a bit gross, you know, like, stinky old Victorians, I love it.
Yeah, I love it, I love it, I love it. And I'm so glad you're reading it, and I'm so glad you're loving it. And I'm sure Elizabeth will be very happy to hear that you are loving it.
I skipped ahead, though, because I was going to say one more thing about suburbia. Why are all these books about women? Like, are we more interested in teenage girls and their boredom than we are teenage boys and their boredom?
Yeah.
I mean, I know we personally are, but...
I just think objectively it's more interesting. I think... I just think there's more room for, like, weird darkness and spikiness among,
like,
girls.
I think only because we don't expect that from girls.
Yeah.
I mean, again, I caveat that with we do, because that's what we're into. But, I don't know, I don't see why, like, the darkness of boys getting into mischief.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's like, isn't it kind of similar to the way, like, murder victims in TV shows tend to be women, like... Would Twin Peaks have been as interesting if it was, like, a good-looking boy who had been killed? I don't know. I just think that, like, we are just more interested in the darkness of...
The corruption of.
Yeah, exactly. The corruption of femininity. it's almost as if we understand that masculinity is inherently corrupt.
Ooh! That's the end of it.
No, I don't know. But yeah, please write in, listeners at home, if you have an opinion on this. We don't know everything. We just... We want to chat.
I guess, like, specifically, I'm thinking about not so much just books that feature teenage boys, because there are fucking loads of them. And they're great. Some of them are great, you know. But I feel like teenage boys exist in the realm of comedy.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of, like, Submarine, Adrian Mole. Like, teenage boys...
Goofy, awkward weirdness. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, they belong to... They are basically a joke. Right? but I want to know, like, is anyone writing in this same on this same kind of level, same kind of tone, but writing about teenage boys?
Is the
teenage boys going missing and being best friends?
And, like, is there a virgin suicides for boys? Like, does this exist?
Oh, yeah. But the teen... So that's the weird thing about the teenage suicides, is because it's written by a man, and it is about a group of teenage boys.
Like, watching the teenage girls.
From the perspective of the boys. Boys watching girls watching boys.
But they're grown up by this time, right?
Yeah, it's, like, the ultimate reflective novel.
Yeah. It's the ultimate in lots of ways.
But also, like, the teenage boys are just this, like, amorphous...
Mass.
...voice. Like, and that, I think, is, again... amazing. I think it's the first ever first person plural novel. I might be wrong on that, but I'm pretty sure it was the first one. And it is completely spectacular in that regard. But therefore it does mean that there is literally nothing about their boys and their relationships with each other.
Yeah.
Because they're just the same
voyeurs. So yeah, please let us know if you have anything you'd like to add to this thought that Alice and I are having. We'd like to hear it. So you're reading The Doll Factory.
What are you reading?
In book form, I am reading A Spicy Little Meatball, which is also quite racist, called The Piano Teacher by Elfriede Jelinek, which is the book on which one of my favourite films is based. So one of my favourite films is The Piano Teacher, the Michael Haneke film. I love it. It bangs so hard. I'm reading the book and, yeah, it has some questionable content, while also being very good. Something I think is particularly interesting about this book is... I don't know if it's a direct influence, but there are lots of Leila Slimani-esque things in it. So ooh. I'd be shocked if Leila Slimani was not a fan of this book. It's good. It's like, yeah, I think I'd rather watch the film, but I probably will finish the book.
I love that.
That's what I'm up to. Listen to my audiobooks, reading my books.
I'm still audiobook-wise. Alex and I are still trucking through Pet Sematary. By cool. Stephen King. It is, like, 14 years long.
How long is it actually in hours?
14 hours.
14 hours. That's, like, twice as long as many novels, but half as long as, like, a third of the longness of, like, Middlemarch or something.
You couldn't listen to it in one go flying to Japan.
Yeah, that's not good.
Think about that.
Yeah.
I'm enjoying it, though. There was a sex scene that we really enjoyed. It was so funny. She, like, jerks him off with a flannel. It was fucking ridiculous.
That's what Stephen King's known for, his sex scenes. Weirdly, that is the thing that we keep talking about, though, right?
What?
Like Stephen King's sex scenes. Like, we talked about the orgy in It last time, didn't we?
I can't laugh right now because of my chest. But I'm so entertained.
Erotic novelist Stephen King. Well, on that note...
What a legacy.
Please join us again. Because we're like... I think we've got one more episode and then it's going to be our books of the year, if I looked at my calendar right. And that's like a big challenge. That's a lot of responsibility. So, yeah, please follow us on twitter.com. We're at WhatPagePod. We are also WhatPagePod on Instagram. You know where to find me and Alice online. Or email us. We're easy to find. Goodbye, my friends. See you next time.
Bye. Bye.